Hello, welcome along to Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. Thank you so much for choosing to listen to this week's episode of my weekly podcast, where I have the luxury of diving into the minds of creatives from the worlds of film, music, and TV, and talk about that beautiful relationship between the moving image and music. We've got loads of great episodes coming up for you. I had the absolute joy of talking to the two composers involved in the TV version of The Last of Us, Gustavo and David Fleming. And that's coming up for you, along with Diego Luna talking about Andor. It's a really fascinating conversation. And Diego really did his homework to talk about both his journey as a filmmaker as well, but also where music has sat with him with regards to specific films and things that have really connected with him. So really looking forward to sharing that episode with you, as well as John Boyega, who you can hear next week. But this week, it is a welcome return to Soundtracking to none other than Chad Stahelski and Keanu Reeves to discuss their work together on John Wick Chapter 4. The pair have clearly had huge amounts of fun making this and all the John Wick films, and their passion for and dedication to building Wick World is plain for all to see on screen. Now that is a great idea. A theme park, Wick World. Who's in? I am. I am a huge fan of these films. I'm not normally into this kind of genre of filmmaking. I love martial arts films. I'm not really that into that many action films, but I feel like they have really created something unique and brilliant. And the character John Wick is brilliant. Keanu just, you can tell how much fun he's having and how, I don't know, how committed to the role he is as well. And it's been a brilliant journey to follow from chapter one right through to where we are, chapter four. And chapter four is scored by Tyler Bates and Joe J. Richard, and it's with their cue Big Wick Energy that will begin. Chad and Keanu, thank you for coming. We had you on 4 years ago for the third chapter talking about the film, and it's so great to step back into the world of John Wick. It really, really was. And that punch that we're talking about, it's this first thing that almost as a film fan, you're kind of there and you're just settling into your seat. You're kind of, you know, getting that comfortable position. And it is like a sucker punch to you to kind of go, come on. Pay attention. We're about to get back into this world. It's welcome a great back. Way to start the film.
Welcome back to John Wick.
Yeah. Boom. Yeah, John Wick's practicing his punch, right?
We want you to know, John Wick, because I think we ended the last one on yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was the last thing. Yeah. And this is a direct cut back into that. Boom. John's back.
When did you know we were going to have a fourth chapter? Because last time we spoke, I asked you whether there was going to be another film, and you were kind of like, we got to wait and see if audiences respond to this and whether they want this film first before we think about a next one. What point did you know there was going to be chapter four?
I mean, I guess after it opened and it did okay, yeah, Lionsgate was like, okay, let's do it. And then we went to Japan because the film's open there later.
Yeah.
And then I guess we started to take it seriously.
Do you start making notes about where you want the character, you know, what's going to happen? Where are we going? What's he going to do? What's the story?
I think it was a lot of riffing back and forth. I
mean, actually, we had to figure out what was the reason to do it.
Yeah. Why do it?
Why do it? What was the story?
And I think we're in Japan and it went, John Wick in Japan, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Like, we like John Wick on a horse.
Bushido. John Wick on a horse.
Bushido. And we started, it started because we were Japanese. In Japan, literally in Tokyo. And we just thought that, we kind of giggled. Like, yeah, that'd be fun. Okay. Yeah, but we don't want to do that.
But that culture is.
Yeah, we do want to.
That culture is such an inspiration, is such a part of, you know, the kind of Japanese culture and that whole martial art world as well is such a kind of big heartbeat to the film, I think, as well, in terms of, is that fair to say?
The code. Like Bushido,
yeah,
we're both fascinated by ritual, etiquette, ceremony, like a code, I guess.
Yeah.
John Wick has a certain code.
Yeah.
So I think that's what was appealing to us, I think, or to myself.
What I love about the film as well is because all these different locations that we go to, you know, Paris, Osaka, Berlin, New York, they all have their own sound as well, you know, in terms of the way that, I don't know if that's something working with Tyler and Joe about the music and about it kind of audibly kind of taking you, almost flying in audibly to those places. And I was interested to talk to you about, you know, the conversations that you have with them about, there has to be a thread through musically, you know, with themes and cues, but there's also it's got to feel fresh and new and specific to that film.
Yeah, no, it's, I guess every time we get to do one of these,
yeah,
like we try to get better. Like I you know, if you could see, barely knew anything when you do the first John Wick, like, and you try to get better as a director, but like a lot of it, we both love music and we both want to have our own, I guess, authorship on it.
Yeah.
So I think Tyler Bates, the composer, and Joel Richardson on the first one kind of gave us a little bit of a, they had an interesting sound on the first.
Sorry, it's Ian McShane's just barging in on our interview. No, hi, Ian McShane.
good.
Good morning, sir.
If you're going to be interrupted,
yeah, exactly.
That's a good
this
way
is the only here. Person you. Thank you, sir. Nice to see you. Yeah, you too. Have a good day. Amazing.
Love the shoes.
I want to talk about him, and there's one scene in particular.
But we were very fortunate. Yeah. Like, I think, you know, as we were putting together the John Wick March, I guess you could say, Tyler, they kind of hit this little, I don't know, like a Western, New Age kind of thump to it. Great job since trying to keep that thematic. So they'll take like a Japanese guitar, or they'll take like a Chinese like a mandolin or something like that, and they'll kind of keep working to find these new sounds.
Yeah.
And you can kind of tell, and I think.
But you're really specific about, to this point, like location, right? And place and setting and coming up with musical cues, themes, and kind of setting the stage for each environment, because this film does have a bit of a travel movie to it, and also different kinds of, you know, the opening, the middle part, you know, and you really do pay a lot of attention to setting up these places and themes.
I think it would go back to, to the Wachowski film school that we came from.
Yeah.
Like, there's a line in the movie that Bill Skarsgård said, how you do anything is how you do everything, and I think that would sum up the Wachowski mentality. Like, they were so intricate on every detail.
Yeah.
And music and wardrobe and fashion was such a big part. When you go into Jordan, when the sun rises, you've got that little bit of Arabic music mixed with Spanish guitar. Japan, there's this like this anime, you know, Ghost in the Shell kind of like the high vocals and stuff that we do a Japanese choir on, which is kind of cool. And then my favorite is like the very end, it's that little ode to Sergio Leone, little tapping guitar. So I think that's so important to help the themes that we're doing and the spaces. Yeah.
Thank you. even like with the Jewel, there's that kind of tiny little bit of rattlesnake almost. It's just a tiny little bit. It's just there. Yeah. You can just hear it. And it's lovely because it's just those kind of little whispers of things that are inspiration, but they're new and they're fresh and they're right for this character and this film. They really, really work.
Thanks.
I wanted to talk about the stair scene in Paris. I mean, there's so many brilliant scenes on this. I love Ian McShane, the scene where he walks into the museum and that walk.
And keeps walking.
And just keeps walking.
Walking.
No one else could get away with it apart from you guys, I think. It's so good. You just kind of like, yeah, he's still walking. Yeah, he's still.
But it's the scale of the paintings.
Yeah,
and you're
this
in
little
the
man almost. Yeah, it's just, it's so great. But that stair scene is, you kind of, I felt like I held my breath for the whole sort of scene. And then when you fall down the stairs again.
I was trying to catch my breath.
You got to beat up John Wick. I think that's a pretty honest look, too. He looks at his watch.
I mean, before we talk about the kind of craft of that, for you, what's the prep for something like that? And, you know, in terms of when you're talking about a specific scene like that and going into filming something like that, what's the choreography, the prep, the dance through of it, all
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it's a wonderful sequence that Chad had the idea for, just having... It's in front of Sacré-Cœur, and I forget how many stairs there are. Is it?
I think there's 200 and almost 40 the whole way, but we did 222.
Okay, so it's 222, and it's near the end of the film, and so it's in a way his epic kind of struggle to reach the top, to reaching for freedom.
Very metaphoric.
Very metaphoric. And so for me, it was a wonderful kind of dramatic moment for the character. So I kind of just sit there. He kind of takes his breath and he's like, okay, here we go. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of the training that I've had, a lot of the experience that I've had kind of comes into play, because there's a lot of choreography and then there's moments that get made up on the day.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
Yeah.
And trying to rehearse on 222.
Yeah, I mean, that was my thing. It's kind of like, kind of getting up some kind of soundstage with those steps into practice.
Or it's like, have like 20 steps in the soundstage to rehearse on.
Yeah.
And you just have to choreograph and
section by section.
About 30, at least 30%, maybe 40 gets done on the day.
And I love as well how there's so much kind of, almost like different moments of the film have a real kind of visual, their own visual identity as well, like the way that that's shot, then the way that, that the scene prior to that where you're in the derelict building and that view from the top as you go, that's so great. It just works where you're following him through and it's this incredible, it feels like one long shot sort of thing.
Another Sahelski inventive creative.
But it's the confidence, and I love what you just, kind of saying about that idea of with the first film, you're jumping on this journey, and by this film, it's so exciting to watch where you've come as a director to the confidence you have in that.
We're unapologetic. No, we like trying stuff.
Yeah.
And you have Keanu that's so game, and so we have a great collaborative creative team.
Yeah.
It starts with Keanu, and if he's down with it and puts in the time, we can do things that a lot of people can't.
Yeah. Do you ever say no to anything?
What have I said no to? No, I mean, Chad's pretty good about knowing what I can and can't do.
Yeah.
And so...
He can read the facial expressions. Go,
no, but like, again, it's not always me to him.
So,
like on number three, he's like, I see John Wick on a horse. And we're like, that's a pretty cool idea.
Yeah.
Let's do you on a horse in Brooklyn. a lot of the ideas that come in that direction.
Yeah. I've got to make an admission as well. Since the last film, I became a dog owner for the very first time. Mm-hmm. I've never had a dog before. I never really got the dog thing. But in the last 2 years, I get the dog thing.
What's the dog's name?
River.
Oh, River.
Yeah, he's a Portuguese water dog. And he's like a spirit. He's just kind of, he senses things. It's unbelievable. So I get John Wick's journey. It's so crazy. The DJ. Can we talk about, I love the DJ. We never see her.
Loose.
We never see her fully, sort of thing. Amazing voice, amazing ideas. Wow.
She's a great, she's a musician from Paris. I think she's originally from Ethiopia, but she has a band in Paris.
Talk to me a little bit about the kind of putting that in as a narrative and what that, why that.
I was a huge, or still am. I've never met Walter Hill. I don't know if you've
met. I've met Walter Hill a couple times.
I just was a big fan of his work. And, I grew up, we must have been in our teens when I saw The Warriors.
Yeah.
I just thought it was it was always cool. You remember Nowhere to Run, the song that they play. And
yeah.
The Warriors. Keanu and I were still putting together the acts, and we had this third act where, okay, we know he's got to get somewhere, but then we want to do the battle royale and the call to arms for all the groups in Paris to come together. We had done the Suicide Girls, we had done Carrier Pigeons, and we're just like, you know, John Wick, we're more of a composition orchestration kind of thing. We've never really, like, every movie has like one needle drop or something like that. And we're like, well, we want something more musical on this one.
Yeah.
And we couldn't figure out how to, like, how do we get needle drops in more organically? And I was like, oh, like, you know, something like The Warriors. And we're like, oh, well, we'll just do The Warriors. We'll just do our own. And I remember we were in Paris.
Yeah, but you also have Continental Radio now, right?
We had the high table radio. And we did, like, that's a great way to get Nowhere to Run, and we'll get a Rolling Stones song in there, and we'll get all this. And we kind of did it that way. That's how it kind of came about.
Around choosing the versions that you used in the film as well?
Well, we knew we loved the Motown, Nowhere to Run, so we just wanted, you know, again, everything in Wick is like, okay, how do we take something and kind of make it ours so it fits in the world? And we did a version of Nowhere to Run. And then my editor, Nate Orloff, is a huge music buff, and they were going around because we wanted something, you know, like, you know, we just had tried in our temp music, like Paint It Black by The Stones. Yeah. And we found a French version of it. And we thought, oh my God, this couldn't be better. And we kind of tried it as temp. And then you see Keanu smashing the car and driving. We're like, it just kind of fit the beat.
Yeah.
Especially when you're switching from overall sound to source music to back. And
yeah.
I don't know. It was kind of accidental, but it just fit. We knew it was right when we tried it.
That's an extraordinary scene, and just, I mean, how long did that take to shoot? Because it's just, it's brilliant to watch.
I think we were 11 days.
Whoa.
It was a lot. It was about 11
days. I have no idea.
It was like two weeks. It was a little over 2 weeks.
And so 2 weeks to shoot, and how much prep for that type of thing?
Well, it's like in different phases. You start with Keanu driving like 4 or 5 months out.
Yeah.
Practicing on the cars and the tracks. And then, you know, again, that's one of the, you don't just go to rehearsals with 50 cars. We kind of got to take our best guess and work our way there.
Is that one of the things you love about your job, that you kind of get the opportunity to learn different, you know, all these skills?
I get to go slide around in cars and muscle cars.
Yeah, you get
to
go like 2 weeks of car practice.
Yeah, it's heaven. I love John Wick Boot Camp. Can't even call it. Maybe it's John Wick Atelier or...
Yeah, it's even more than boot camp.
Yeah, it's less than boot camp. But I mean, it's more like training. Anyway, yes, that sequence was a lot of fun. Mm. A lot of components, because you also had a bunch of people running, you know, getting hit by cars. Had to create the kind of the atmosphere of traffic in multiple lanes. It took a lot of...
A lot of thinking on that.
A lot of thinking, planning, cooperation. Scott Rogers... Stunt coordinator.
Jeremy Marinas, our fight choreographer.
Yeah.
Koji, you know, we have a very big stunt team.
Yeah. And I love how you keep the sound in there in the fights. You know, the kind of like, I don't know if it's saying shit or whatever in the background, but you can kind of hear all these kind of sounds and stuff.
We'll
kind
give
of
credit
it's
to,
so great.
Mark Steckinger is our sound design guy, and Andy Koyama is our mixer. I never knew as a director going how much I'd enjoy sound.
Yeah.
But after the first, we met, they've been on with us for all 4 weeks. It's one of the funnest parts of post. It's just these half a dozen guys, and they're all laughing the whole, like, how do we get the, like, they love the movies, they love cars, they love guns, they love martial arts fights, they love action movies. To see these guys work and put in so many layers, it's like the John Wick sound design.
Immersive.
Very immersive. They're fantastic.
Do you listen to music when you're kind of in John Wick camp?
I don't.
No.
No, sometimes the dojo will have music, so, you know, some of the fellows play music while we're warming up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then when we start getting into like repetitions and stuff, kind of turn it down. But there is music around in the dojos.
Yeah. How do you know what, you know, with these incredible set pieces and fight scenes, how do you know when to stop them? When's kind of like, you know, that's long enough?
You never have enough till you have too much. What's the John Wick phrase?
Just a little bit more.
To be honest, we have our best guess in conclusion for action sequences, but learned a lot in the last couple of years with all the John Wicks compared to other films. You never know till you watch the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Like we've edited the sequences 100 times, and you'll watch the sequence. Yeah, that's great. But then you'll watch the two-hour and 40-minute version, and you're like, wow, that just didn't feel right. And there's a little trim, or some we've over trimmed before, so I've actually added some back, and then we've taken some away. You learn that it's the whole experience.
Yeah.
The rhythm of the action sequence is important, but the rhythm, how it fits into the whole thing, is kind of really how we judge it.
I wanted to talk a little bit about casting as well, if you don't mind as well, because Bill Skarsgård is just, I mean, brilliant bit of casting in this. It's just like, yeah.
We really like
Whose him. Idea was that then?
Honestly, I met Bill way back when my former partner Dave Leach was doing Atomic Blonde, and Bill had done a small part in it. And we've been following him ever since. And the original script have a few other different characters, and we're going to do different things. So I just knew Bill seemed like he would fit the world very well. So we sent him the script. I talked to him, said, hey, how would you like to be in a John Wick? He said, great, send me the pages and we'll see. So I actually sent him a very early version of the script. I didn't really mention the part, just read it, and thinking he would go with the part that had a little bit of action to it.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, that's great. I'd love to be the Marquis. Like, no, Bill, that's not the... I was thinking for something else, this other part.
Oh, what?
Like, oh, no. That's the fun part. Like, I want to be that guy. And I'm like, really? Well, he gets to go with Keanu. He gets to go with Bit. Like, he's all the great. Like, that's the part. I want to do that guy. And we're like, oh. And we talked, and we're like, that could be really interesting. And it just kind of happened that way.
He just brings, like, this almost kind of spoiled bratness to it, I think. He's almost kind of like...
Very entitled.
Yeah. It's so, like...
Arrogance and confidence.
And what's that accent he's doing? It's so fantastic.
What do you say? It's like a broken Cajun... It is like Cajun French or something.
Cajun French.
That's what he was saying. Mixed with a little Swedish.
It's so good.
It's awesome.
He's delightful.
Yeah.
Was it fun... To
he's
play
so
in that
good.
Playground with him.
Well, he had a pathos to him, you know, but he also had he had that thing where he's the guy who you just hate as soon as you see him.
He just had that way, like frame one, day one from the first.
In the costume.
Yeah.
He's got the facial expression.
He just,
too.
But he acts with such joy.
He does. He loves it. He embraces it. He loves it.
You can tell he's like a kind of kid in a playground, just kind of with the best toys ever. And you're right, it's the outfits, it's the grandeur of every environment that he's in. Even when he turns away from people and he makes these little facial expressions.
Oh, yes, the Skarsgård tics.
It's funny, we started playing, but if you watch all the takes, we always let Bill's take go a little bit longer. Keanu taught me very early on about big screen acting.
Yeah.
It's about little tics and little facials that define him. Like, you'll see him when he's staring at the painting and Winston gives it, and he's got this little half smile. Just for a moment, you can miss it if you blink. But it's always that just after the scene's over, he'll do the look, he'll do the thing, and then you're like, oh, I get this guy.
And the eating. It's just like...
eating dessert. He's got a sweet tooth.
He's got just the way he stirs the coffee.
Yeah. But he gives power to the high table. Like, you believe it. You buy that it's just ancient in time. Yeah.
You're kind of going, how is he there? How did he get there?
Actually, and then you're right. It's got a lot of weight behind it.
Yeah.
He's a great personification of the pathos of the high table.
And strength.
And then Lawrence as well. I just love the scenes with you and Lawrence Fishburne, you know, in terms of just the, you know, he's not in it that much, but when he is, the power and presence that he has in it is just...
There's a great
you
connection
feel it.
Between the Bowery King. I think that's one thing we tried to explore, that was like fellowship.
Yeah.
You know, brotherhood, trust, this weird kind of friendship when everyone's got on different sides of the line, but there's respect. I think that's very cool. Again, etiquette.
There was a couple of themes that I really got from it, friendship being one of them, and the kind of father-daughter thing as well mm-hmm. that kind of runs through it as well. And I think that that's what you do brilliantly with this particular film, I think, as well, is that there's kind of so there's real heart at it. You know, it's kind of all this crazy stuff's going on, but when you kind of, you know, it's about relationships. And that kind of really, I feel, kind of comes through, particularly with, is it Shimazu? And, you know, you kind of see that relationship, and that's just kind of like, oh, man, I just want that. I want them to go on holiday together before this happens and see how, you know, see that relationship, because it's beautiful.
Oh, that's kind, yeah.
That's nice.
I've worked with Hiroyuki before. Is that lovely to bring that experience then to when you are kind of reunited on a different film, on a different project, but you have history, so you can bring that.
Yeah, definitely. The relationship in the film in chapter four, definitely I feel benefited from the shorthand that Hiro and I have and the experience, shared experience. Yeah.
Like there's a bonding.
Yeah.
I think comes across more than.
It's ephemeral, but it's solid too. Yeah. Like you can feel it when they're talking to each other.
I think when you see Lawrence get out of the train, that's a real smile. Welcome to De La Resistance.
Yeah.
A little far from home, aren't you? I mean, yeah, I think we have a great cast, and I think they all get along really well, and it comes across.
Yeah. And the sunrise, that's a kind of character almost in the film in a way.
Yeah, I'm so happy that Edith is sharing that with you, because that was important to you. That was like...
Yeah, I think I have a sunrise fetish. I think
that's one of the most beautiful things in the world.
Also, the whole film before then is at night. Yeah.
Well, we have the sunset. Once that sun comes up, that's all you get. And then it's 100
days. It's like the film opens with a sunrise and it closes with a sunset. Oh, a sunrise too, yeah. I mean, it's a sunrise, sunset, sunrise.
And then it sets, that's the movie.
And then and then it's, I don't want to go into detail about kind of bits in the film towards the end and things, because, you know, I don't want to spoil anything for people watching the film sort of
thing.
Thank you. But there feels like there's, there's more that we know anyway with Ballerina and things as well. So even though there might not be, I don't know if there's, you know, what's next for John Wick, but he's back in some kind of, in some time frame between these films,
Yeah, they're doing another film called Ballerina, and I got to play John Wick in that. And it was cool. The director, Len Wiseman, you know, spoke with Chad a lot and with me as well. Like, he was very considerate, like where he would pitch the context of his film. Yeah. And so it was nice of him to pitch it between our calendar. So it happens between John Wick chapter 3 and John Wick chapter 4.
It's nice. Kind of almost like, you know, nice that there are, I don't know, he's kind of just, you can step in and out in a way.
Yeah. So I got to
put the suit back on.
I got to wear the suit for another week.
And it's always nice when people like the franchise and they want to do other things. Very flattering. But I think Len's got a great take on it.
Yeah. What's next for both of you?
I don't know. I'm working on
You've got a long list of things that are either, you know, kind of...
I don't know. It's all wacky out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Stahelski. What do you... I mean, you've been working on this film for 3 years
It'll almost be 3 years next week, yeah.
I mean, I think all of the work you put into developing the script, the story...
was a lot.
You know, there was no stone unturned, you know, in trying to come to the story that you came to. And so, I mean, I think that has to go into it as well. I mean, you worked on the script for at least 8 months or even a year, maybe.
It was almost a year. I mean, it was a little bit COVID, but it was good to have the time in at least a positive way. But I think, you know, everyone, I don't know, one of the most frequent questions you get is like, how do you outdo yourself? How do you go bigger, stronger, faster? And I think it was just everybody getting a little bit better.
Yeah.
And also, I think you try to get better in, like, if you talk about action. We kind of had a revelation about how to do better with that. And it was from talks of people that I think are way better than I am. But it was like, okay, how do you do better with the action? And it's just not a Top Shot or Cars. It's kind of what you do before the action. Mm. You can see the rhythm in the John Wicks. The first movie, I think it was like 42 minutes before there was any action. And then you have number 3 that starts off with 30 minutes straight of, you know, this plethora of action. And this one, we kind of took our time again too. And I think it was this little revelation of something we wanted to try. We're like, let's build up the characters so there's real weight to it.
Yeah.
So I think the real I think the most important thing you do to make a great action sequence is the setup.
Yeah.
You love all the characters. You know the relationships. You know what's at stake. So when they do fight and he has to fight a friend, by the time him and Donnie actually go to blows, you kind of know where they're all coming from and why it's such a big deal. It's not about the moves. It's about two friends on opposite sides of the line. And Hiroyuki and Donnie, like, we spent a lot of time trying to develop things. And after the Osaka sequence, there's another break where you see he's got to go to the Risk of Roma. And now it's start seeing the stakes and the consequences of what's happened when Rina comes to him and all this stuff. So the way the movie's kind of designed is establish stakes, fight, establish stakes, raise stakes, fight. And I think that's something we kind of got on this one, why we spent so much time with the writing, because we wanted the action to punch out more.
Yeah.
And that's not always with bigger explosions. It's took me forever to figure it out, but it's more about character and storytelling than it is the explosions.
Yeah. I think that some of the characters that we meet for the first time in this film as well, we learn so much about them from the way that they are portrayed to us in the, you know, through their costume, through the way they hold themselves. I mean, that whole Berlin club scene is just phenomenal, and it's the with the axes and the water and the
killer.
Oh, and the moment with the back over the balcony, like the audible response from the audience watching this film was so brilliant. And that's one of the things I love about watching these films as well, is that you're part of a community watching it, and you're watching it together on a big screen, and you kind of, I don't know, you it's great, it's infectious, that response from people as well.
Cool.
How many extras in that Berlin sequence, and what are you, because they're partly kind of just dancing away, and then they're partly kind of going, oh God, no, there's a man with an axe kind of thing.
They're in the Wick world.
It's such a fine line. But it's such a fine line, you know, of getting it right, that they're not, that it feels
real.
Well,
you seated the dancers and stuff, dancers.
We had like 20 great, we went out in Berlin and we found 20 great, from a dance troupe, or a few different dance troupes, we had to get like 20 dancers that have really, like, they were phenomenal dancers. And then we kind of surrounded, you know, the shot with them. And we had about 300 cast. I mean, it was during COVID, so we had to be very careful how we did our sectors and quadrants. Yeah. But I think we had about 300 that we managed to replicate and tile throughout the club. Still, I mean, our line producer and our you know, AD team did a really good job of keeping it all safe, but still making it look like, wow, we got a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't just that. I mean, there was an orchestration and consideration. The performance, they were great. It was like you were saying, like,
it's a little tricky.
Pay attention. Don't pay attention.
Yeah. Don't look at him. You know, that kind of thing.
But don't be ignorant. Not ignorant, but don't recognize it.
We're within the John Wick world, so we get away with a little bit more than probably like Collateral club scene where everybody reacts on the first gunshot.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in a club when there's,
this kind of happens every Friday night. And
I've been at a club when there's been a fight. Do you know what I mean?
And some people are like, well, we'll just stay away. Other people are like, oh, don't wreck my night. We're still here.
Yeah. And what's that like for you, Keanu, with regards to, you know, you're kind of, I guess, performing in front of a crowd, which is different to a lot of the other sort of action scenes. Is it different for you? Is it different?
With that stuff, no, I was just still trying to figure out the choreography and trying not to suck and kind of focused on trying to do okay.
In dress shoes and waterfalls.
And dress shoes and waterfalls.
Got some kind of like safety sort of thing on the bottom of the shoes so you're not sliding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That would have been a great idea.
Yeah.
We try. It's just, I mean, it's a waterfall.
Yeah.
It doesn't work the way they tell you it's going to work.
Have you got a favorite scene from the film? Is that an easy question to answer? Either to shoot or, I mean, you've not seen it yet, which is kind of the final film yet.
I mean, I've seen the edit, but closer to finish, but not finished.
Yeah.
Favorites are tough.
Yeah. Most memorable then?
Well, there's lots of memorables. I don't know, without giving away, I love the story of John Wick in this. And I think the journey through it, I mean, there was really, that journey was the reason why I did it.
And we talked before we started recording about a particular emotion.
And with that, there was a certain melancholy. Like, I feel like John Wick's almost taking in everything with everyone he's meeting and everything that he's doing. Mm. And I think I did as well. And so there was method acting, and there was a nice kind of connection to the story.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's been a great journey you've been on with this guy.
So all of those moments, you know, being in, there's a canal underneath Paris scene with Lawrence and Ian McShane, Bowery King, and the
I really like
manager
that.
Of the New York Continental.
I like the little string of that, the the boat scene to the church, which I really like. And I like the end of the just a little wrap up. Those would be my favorite.
Yeah.
Then but they're opening. All genre scenes.
Yeah. It's and quite nice. Small scenes and emotional scenes.
I think those are the three that help us with the other three films. I think they those three scenes specifically kind of wrap up our little quadrilogy.
Yeah.
Well, quadrilogy.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. I don't know. It's now. It needs to
quadrilogy,
be.
Quadrilogy.
John Wick deserves his own dictionary for sure. Well, thank you for the journey that we've been on with this character. If there is any more or not, it's been an absolute thrill to watch it and enjoy it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks
thank
a lot.
You.
Cheers. Thank you. From the score to John Wick Chapter 4, that's Cry Me a River, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Chad Stahelski and Keanu Reeves. My huge thanks to Keanu and Chad for taking the time to talk to us. John Wick Chapter 4 is on general release now and deserves to be heard and seen on the big screen, if only to fully appreciate the amazing sound design that we discussed. So go and see it at a cinema immediately. Head to edithbowman.com to hear my previous conversations with the boys, as well as every single other episode of the podcast, Tyler Bates included. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, and do find us on Spotify to listen to dedicated playlists for each episode. Because we only play tiny little bits of music in the podcast, we create a playlist for every single episode. So get onto Spotify and find us and follow us and subscribe. Next up then, John Boyega talking about his fantastic performance in Breaking. We also might have talked about Attack the Block 2. John Boyega, next week's guest. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.